Attachment theory offers a profound lens through which we can understand our deepest connections. It sheds light on the invisible threads that weave the fabric of our relationships. It's often described as one of the most impactful theories in psychology because it helps to explain our behaviors in so many ways. It's not just in romance, but actually, basically, it's in everything. It's an explanation of our own trust and connection patterns, whilst also providing a framework to recognize these patterns across different individuals. Every interaction we have is a chance to nurture trust or erode it. Perhaps you're working with someone who turns up late to a meeting or makes a mistake in a document. To maintain a secure attachment, you should make them feel valued and understood, whilst also outlining improvements that need to be made without being overly threatening. If you were to just make them look stupid or make them feel that their job is at risk, that can erode trust. Yet, if you give them a free pass to just screw things up as much as they like, that's a one-way ticket to terrible work standards. Now, depending on that person's attachment style, you might need to have quite different conversations. Some people might be crushed if you're too harsh on them, whilst others might need harsher feedback to be able to register that it's important. Now, the biggest relationships in your life are, of course, romantic, and the relationships between parents and their children. It's these relationships where our attachment style is most exposed and vulnerable. It's where our behaviors can become amplified and also have the most impact on those around us. By learning how different attachment styles work, we can create empathy for others and deepen our understanding of ourselves. And it actually feels very much like a masterclass in maturity by diving into this. Now, this next thing might sound dumb, but even a pet has attachment styles. An anxious dog might become distressed when you leave the house and display some destructive behaviors. So, understanding attachment theory can help us with all relationships, friends, family, co-workers, teammates, of course, our romantic partners, and perhaps most importantly, at least for some of us, our pets. So today we're going on a crash course deep dive into attachment theory and how childhood experiences shape them and how to identify attachment styles and to improve them. You can see people making a lot of mistakes and assumptions around attachment theory, so I'm going to outline some of the biggest errors that you see to help you gain a practical working knowledge that is a bit less naive than others might have. And then when we dig into how to use attachment theory to improve yourself, you'll also learn how to leverage your knowledge going forward to create healthier relationships. So hello and welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast with me, Sam Webster-Harris, diving into the psychology of self-improvement and today's topic of attachment theory and attachment styles. Attachment styles are patterns of attachment behavior that we first form as an infant. The theory was first developed by John Bowlby and Mary Ainsworth, who found that these attachment styles influence how individuals perceive and respond to intimacy and connection. As infants, we learn to co-regulate our emotions with our caregivers. If they are stressed or inconsistent in their behaviors or often absent, this can create expectations and emotional patterns in our needs around relationships. Quite incredibly, it's the first 18 months of being alive that have the biggest impact on us. Of course, the entire parenting journey until the child eventually leaves home will still have effects, but not as much as those first 18 months. In the same way that our tiny brain is learning language and essential skills like balance and walking, it's also learning attachment patterns. Evolutionarily speaking, attachment is as important to a human's survival as walking and talking. In prehistoric times, individuals who formed close bonds with others had a survival advantage over those who remained solitary. And so this biological predisposition towards forming attachments then underpins our relationships which occur now in the modern day, including our romantic relationships. John and Mary found that there were four main attachment styles. Secure attachment is the most common. 50% of people are said to be secure. They tend to have a positive view of themselves and their relationships. They tend to feel comfortable with intimacy and are able to balance it with being independent as well. They can be honest in their relationships and generally supportive and able to communicate their needs and their feelings effectively. As children, they were given regular attention and consistent love and support as a child, which helped them to feel secure and stable in their relationships. Now, I am still a bit flabbergasted by the claim that 50% of people are able to communicate their needs and feelings effectively, because that's clearly not quite accurate. I would maybe word it more like, these people can get by at communicating in an imperfect manner, because most people can't be described as effective at communicating their needs. Anyway, next we have anxious attachment. They often need higher levels of attention and intimacy from their partner, and they need someone who's able to provide consistent responsiveness to any of their needs and to perhaps supply them with regular reminders of their love and approval for them. They tend to have a fundamental negative view of themselves and worry about whether their partner loves them back. As a child, they were often neglected or only shown inconsistent affection, whilst perhaps sometimes being made to feel bad for their needs. This means their nervous system is on alert around those that they love, and they have an expectation that it could collapse at any moment. The anxious attachment style can appear sometimes clingy and dependent due to fear of rejection, whilst experiencing rapid and severe emotional highs and lows based on their perception of the relationship, which may or may not match actual reality. Perhaps, say, a partner doesn't pick up some calls or text back because they have some back-to-back meetings. This could trigger an anxious attacher who thinks that they are being avoided when actually their partner's just busy. Next, there is the avoidant attachment style. Avoidants tend to distance themselves from others emotionally. They may prioritize independence and self-sufficiency because they can become overwhelmed by too much intimacy and prefer to avoid closeness. They often hold a very positive view of themselves, but a negative view of others. As a child, their caregivers perhaps taught them that intimacy and dependence was weak. Whether explicitly through words or just through actions, the message was that you can't rely on others. Now, it does sound like avoidance might be stoic due to being more independent, yet their tendency to pull away from closeness is through fear rather than through their strength and security. Finally, there is the disorganized attachment style, which is basically a combination of anxious and avoidant. It's sometimes referred to as fearful avoidant due to their desire for emotional closeness, yet fundamental distrust of others due to fear of being hurt. This means they can be erratic in relationships, seeking closeness, then pulling away when it becomes intense. So how do these styles affect our relationships? Firstly, in managing our emotions. If you are secure, you understandably have less built-in emotional worries and you tend to self-regulate better as well. Being less emotional creates more stability for you in your relationships, whereas insecure, anxious attachers struggle with their emotions, leading them to put a lot of pressure on their relationships. Avoidants, however, hide their emotions, which again makes it hard for the relationship to grow. In terms of communication, secure attachers are better at explaining their needs, and importantly, they tend to have a better understanding of their needs. They were taught to be honest about their feelings, and even if they aren't perfect communicators, as I've mentioned, they at least aren't trying to hide what they are thinking. Whilst the other attachment styles, in fact, grew up directly hiding their feelings, or because they were often shamed for having them. This understandably makes it much harder for other attachment styles to talk openly when you've learned that you are weak or annoying for talking about your feelings. When it comes to conflict, this again causes some further problems. A secure attacher will find it easier to empathize or using strategies such as compromising to resolve a conflict, whilst the avoidant predictably tends to avoid conflict entirely, and will find that the anxious attacher will have very high emotions, which can be expressed in anger or sadness, or of course both. Then, if you look at the disorganized attacher, they can be very inconsistent here, sometimes emotional, sometimes dismissive and avoidant, and it's very hard to know how they might react. In relationships, healthy conflict is essential to make progress, because it helps partners feel understood and talk about their needs, which is essential for nurturing a relationship and keeping them close. So having unhealthy modes for conflict doesn't help the relationships at all. And finally, we can look at just general relationship satisfaction levels. Being a secure attacher is linked to higher relationship satisfaction, trust, and commitment, whereas anxious and avoidant styles do tend to be less satisfied due to their difficulties faced whilst managing their emotions and trusting others. This in turn makes it much harder for them to create feelings of trust for their partner to trust them with. So you can see that these different behavioral predispositions will have a profound effect on the patterns that you'll be experiencing in your relationships. Often when people hear about attachment theory, so many things suddenly click into place. In our own attachment style and our own experiences with others, you probably recognize the different sorts of behaviors and can start to understand at least some of the reasons why. As we've seen, secure attachers have the least trouble, and if you are avoidant or anxious, it's much easier to be in a relationship with a secure attacher for you. However, as is often the way, it does seem that opposites attract, and anxious and avoidant individuals often find themselves in relationships together, where they seem to be going in circles of intimacy and conflict. Before we go into depth of what to do about attachment styles, I want to cover the main mistakes people make when hearing about them. But firstly, I want to talk about magic mind. So you may or may not be aware that nature blessed me with the attention span of a cucumber and the curiosity of a kitten. But with my science degree, I have an avid fascination on the biology of managing my energy and my concentration without relying on caffeine or ADHD drugs. This means that I avoid too much coffee and running around on nervous fumes. I instead love to incorporate things like matcha tea and L-theanine into my day and use nootropic superfoods like ashwagandha, bacopa, turmeric, and lion's mane. However, there is a financial and time cost into managing the supplies of all of these different things, and that's where magic mind can save the day. It's a simple daily shot that genuinely has everything that science and my body says works. It helps you manage your mood and concentration, helps you sleep better, and reduces energy crashes and stress and anxiety. I genuinely can't recommend it enough to anyone interested in their health and performance. You can get 56% off an order or subscription at magicmind.com/growthms by using my code growthms20 at checkout. They do offer a 100% money-back guarantee if you don't feel any benefits, so there's nothing to lose. You can try today at magicmind.com/growthms to invest in your brain, and you'll get 56% off by using growthms20 code at checkout. Details in the episode description. I am delighted to recommend my sponsor, Cozy Earth, whose bedding and loungewear I genuinely love. It's made from high quality viscose from bamboo, and it gets softer with every wash. It was voted as Oprah's favorite things several years in a row, and it's because their bed sheets are so damn incredible. Their collection also includes some divine loungewear for your home or travel. They have cute little tote bags to carry your gear anywhere, so whether you are exploring through a journey of personal growth or discovering new parts of the world, you can nestle up under starry skies with the softness of Cozy Earth's loungewear. So pack your bags, venture on, and visit cozyearth.com today and use code GROWTH at checkout for an exclusive 35% off. And let Cozy Earth be your travel companion on the road to adventurous growth. CozyEarth.com and use code GROWTH at checkout. Now onto the mistakes that people make when thinking about attachment theory. There are several significant mistakes when it comes to learning about attachment styles. Firstly, I think it's always important to remember that a scientific principle or theory can be very clear on paper, but much more nuanced in practice. I'm sure you'll know that an introvert still needs friends and attention, perhaps not in the same way as an extrovert, but the world isn't just two types of people who are either 100% extrovert or 100% introvert. It's a spectrum of people, and you can actually change on that spectrum. I used to personally be more an introvert, but now I'm almost 50-50. As I became better at talking and expressing myself, I started to make more friends, I had life experiences that helped me find more of the sorts of nutters that I get along with best, and that means I started to have more fun being social, and in turn, I became less independent and more interested in being social. Anyway, I'm saying this because it's the same with attachment styles. If you have this concept in your head that there are only four distinct attachment styles and everyone is simply binary, one a style or the other, that would be false. in some relationships or situations, we might be very secure, and in others, we might be very insecure. It's very possible that you could be a secure attacher, but have some insecurities about specific things, like maybe your nose or your finances, because you've had partners that have left you in the past due to that. There's also the term emotional availability being thrown around a lot. Now, someone who's emotionally unavailable might be someone that's dealing with some unresolved pain and holding back their emotions right now. It might also be someone who is an avoidant attacher, which is commonly expected it to be of, or, sadly, in many cases, it might be that they are just not that into you. Now, trying to solve someone's emotional unavailability by analysing their avoidant attachment style won't get you anywhere if they actually just aren't too bothered about you and are indecisively on the lookout for someone better without really admitting it to themselves or you. So this is why it's important to highlight the worst mistakes people make when they learn about attachment. Firstly, we can overgeneralize attachment styles. That means assuming that an individual's attachment style is fixed and applies universally across all their relationships. We can easily judge others this way, but we can also judge ourselves. Whilst attachment styles do tend to be stable, they are also influenced by context. An anxious attacher and an avoidant attacher will tend to bring out the worst traits in both of each other and turn the anxious person more anxious and the avoidant more avoidant, whereas the opposite can happen when they're with a secure person. An anxious person with a stable and secure partner can be much more secure. Similarly, a secure partner might actually make another secure partner feel a bit insecure because they don't make them feel as needed if that secure partner has been used to being with anxious people who tend to make them feel very needed the whole time. So this highlights the importance of the second mistake, which is neglecting the influence of context, because it's really important to consider the context of where an attachment behavior is observed. Attachment styles can manifest differently depending on many situational factors, such as things like stress and relationship dynamics. Let's say I have some bad sleep, I can be moodier, but I can also be more insecure, I can be more anxious, I can be more avoidant and dismissive all at the same time, as well as being just amazingly sorry for myself. So if I'm just sleepy, it's not really worth judging my attachment style as a representation of me. But there are other things that can affect my attachment style. So generally speaking, I'm a secure attachment style person, but since the Brexit referendum, as a British person, I have become more insecure about dating European partners because I don't know if I can stay in Europe for very long and it's going to turn into a long distance relationship. It's a situation that makes me nervous, which is further impacted by the fact that I've had three relationships before that were all okay until we had a period of long distance where those relationships then ended. And that's made me more insecure about long-distance relationships. Or to go more general, if someone has perhaps lost their job or isn't getting good sleep or doesn't have a fixed place to live or doesn't have much money in the bank, these are all things that are going to make them feel more stressed and more insecure about literally everything going on in their life and could probably make them a more anxious attachment style or perhaps avoidant, because their emotional state is craving security and stability, and that might come through a relationship or that might come from avoiding a relationship and being independent. I think it's also interesting to note here that if you work as a digital nomad, that can be great, but by lacking a stable home, that can make some people much more anxious. So if you are prone to being insecure, you might not want to idolize the digital nomad lifestyle because it actually might be horrible for you. Now, the third mistake people make is stigmatizing certain attachment styles, because I think it's very easy to label things as good and bad. And as you can probably tell by now, that in general, any attachment style that isn't secure has been labeled as bad. So if you're anxious or avoidant, it can be considered inherently problematic or undesirable. And that could be a mistake. If you live with a label that says that you are just a broken person, that only secure attachment is good, that would be inaccurate. In the same way that it took me a while to lean into the strengths of ADHD without letting the weaknesses be a blocker, you can do the same for attachment styles. By understanding your attachment style and your needs, you can be proactive about expectations and create just as healthy a relationship as anyone else can. An anxious attacher can actually use their needs as a strength to be more attentive and make the relationship more secure by how clearly they value it. An avoidant can be great at giving space for a partner who is maybe career focused. Whereas actually a secure person can make a partner feel anxious sometimes by not seeming too worried about things. So even a secure attacher can still need to work to create a good relationship, and they aren't actually perfect. By creating understanding and empathy towards different attachment styles, that's really the important thing here rather than labeling them as good and bad. Now, number four, that is oversimplifying the complexity of relationships. There are just numerous factors beyond simply just attachment styles in a relationship. Yes, trust is a fundamental core of any relationship, but if you remember the Science of Love episode, love is not only attachment but also lust and attraction. There are, of course, other things that affect our relationship, like our personality traits and specific life experiences or environmental stresses that all greatly impact how we're behaving here and now and how we show up in a relationship. Mistake number five is the misapplication of attachment theory. Now, some people will actually use the knowledge of their attachment style to then justify unhealthy relationship behaviors, such as being overly possessive or creating emotional distance. Attachment theory should only serve as a tool for understanding and improving relationship dynamics. It should not be used to excuse poor relationship behaviors. I mean, simply put it, like, being a psychopath doesn't make it okay to kill people. And whatever your attachment style is, it's your responsibility to stop any toxic behaviors that you might have, rather than avoiding taking ownership of them. And that leads to the last mistake, which is the fact that people often ignore the potential for their attachment style to change. When we learn about attachment style, many people mistakenly then believe that attachment styles are fixed. However, research has shown that individuals can move towards a more secure attachment patterns through therapy and self-reflection, along with supportive relationships. Now, yes, currently 70% of people don't change their attachment style as an adult, but most people don't actually do hard work on themselves with the honesty that their behaviors are under their control. Most people don't truly take a growth mindset orientated approach towards their life or their attachment styles. And that means that if you're willing to, you can absolutely improve your relationships and change your attachment style. So I think the first thing to make absolutely clear here when you're looking to improve your relationships and attachment styles is that dependency on a partner is not a sign of weakness, but it is actually a foundation for strength. Interdependency, as I've said in the last episode, is essential for a relationship. By relying on someone who meets our emotional needs, we all feel safer and more secure. It encourages us to take risks and pursue personal achievements. So regardless of your attachment style, by embracing that you do have needs, that's the first step to being able to communicate them without shame. As I mentioned, 30% of adults change their attachment style over their life. That of course means that anxious and avoidance can become more secure. Now, this is usually due to relationships that they are in, and as well as help from things like therapy. However, within this statistic, that also means that secure attachers can become anxious or avoidant. Again, usually due to their relationships. As I've mentioned, I'm secure, for example, and yet there have been a few experiences that made me feel more insecure. By aiming to confine those experiences just to those scenarios rather than generalize about my inability in relationships can help me feel more secure. And then further working on the element that is causing me insecurity. So, like I mentioned, I have some insecurity around long distance relationships, but I recently had 3 months away in Nepal mountain guiding, which I was worried about, but by communicating those worries with my partner, we were kind of able to work through it and the relationship is still going, which was super nice to have as a result. And now, I know this might sound stupid, but if you are a secure attacher, your job is basically to try and stay as a secure attacher. And what that means is that if you notice your partner making you feel insecure or avoidant about something, it's worth paying attention to and trying to fix. Now, an interesting point here for any attachment style is that we should examine the type of people that we usually date, because generally we'll often have a type that we date. That might also ring true for the type of attachment style that we date. Now, if we keep on dating people and ending up breaking up, that's probably an indication that if we're dating the same types of people and we're not taking those relationships further and we're not getting married, then perhaps dating that type of person indicates that that type isn't right for us. So let's say you're anxious and often end up with avoidant, mysterious people. You might need to go for some slightly more reliable and perhaps less spontaneous partners that can behave more securely for you. If you are avoidant, you might need to accept that you shouldn't be going for the intensity of an anxious partner and choose someone that's more secure, but where you also have to put in some effort to keep the relationship going. If you're secure, it might be okay to date someone who is slightly anxious, who might be willing to give you more attention and validation than someone else who's secure. The point here is that if what you have been doing hasn't been working, it's worth trying something different to see if it will improve. Now, as I mentioned, the different styles don't mean that you're broken if you have one that isn't secure, and you are still able to actually have healthy relationships. If you are an anxious attacher, here are some tips for how to improve your attachment style and your relationships. Now, the first biggest tip here is to not get involved with avoidance or to try to change their style. Instead, it's better to learn to recognize an avoidance behavior and bypass these as major red flags for you and your relationship needs. So if they are sending you mixed messages about their feelings, it's just not worth it for you. Someone who's secure will have a clear message. If you're dating someone who talks about their longing for a perfect relationship, but it doesn't sound like they are talking about you, it's probably a sign that you need to run away. If you try to communicate your needs or desires, but the person changes the subject or ignores the topic, again, that's a sign that they're avoidant. A healthy partner will listen to you. If you find that they complain about you being too sensitive or needy, that's again something that a secure partner won't deliberately do to make you feel bad. Now, that said, as an anxious attacher, they can become hypersensitive to threats and potential criticism, even if it wasn't meant as a criticism. So if someone points out that you are sensitive, it doesn't necessarily mean the same thing as someone telling you how terrible your sensitivity is. Yet an anxious person might perceive both things the same way, and that would be bad because they are quite different things. So it's really important to check what people mean before you start making assumptions, which leads on to communication. As an anxious attacher, you do just have to be direct and honest about it. You do have emotional needs, and they are valid. That's fine. If you feel concerned about trying to play it cool in the relationship, you need to just stop doing that. If you start a new relationship, speak up about your emotions and just get your crazy out. Be open about it. By being your authentic self, you'll be able to find partners that are okay with that, whilst if you cover up your style and pretend to be more independent and mysterious, it's more likely to attract someone who's avoidant. The other critical lesson here is for anxious attachers to slow down. Now, all of us can get excited and overwhelmed by emotions, but for anxious attachers, they can get attached incredibly fast. Once their system is activated, they are just hooked, and so it makes sense for anyone who's anxious to try and encourage more distance. That means maybe waiting for a few dates before you have sex, and perhaps not seeing a new partner every day in the first few weeks or months. Now, a secure person will be fine with this, whereas an avoidant will probably get bored, and that's exactly what you want. Now, if you're avoidant, you might at times feel lonely, even in a relationship, and you might perhaps wonder if there's someone better out there. You might have some very rigid views of what you're looking for and hyper-focus on small imperfections of your partner whilst idolizing a past relationship, perhaps. Avoidants also tend to fall into relationships that can't go anywhere, like a relationship with a married partner or someone on the other side of the world. They also tend to keep a lot of secrets in relationships and might answer personal questions quite vaguely. Avoidants can very easily fall into the trap of self-reliance. Western culture does celebrate independence, and avoidants can feel like they are being very stoic. However, confidence sounds great, but assuming that you can take care of all of your needs by yourself can mean that you're bad at accepting help that you do genuinely need, and it also leads to them ignoring the needs of others. Their tendency to idolize the ghost of a previous partner or an imaginary perfect partner only makes things worse. The issue here is that it's very hard to change this mindset. If the avoidant believes that the problem lies in their partner's unworthiness, it's nothing to do with them, it's the fact that their partner isn't good enough. Interestingly, the most consistent intervention that helps an avoidant change their relationship style is a near-death experience. After having a life-changing trauma due to illness or an accident or maybe a death of a family member, this can unseat their belief system and create a catalyst for self-awareness and responsibility in their relationships. Now, anxious partners that are listening to this, I know what you're thinking, and no, Don't hospitalize or gravely injure your avoidant partners. I do agree this might be a very sensible strategy, but it is illegal, so let's move on before I give you too many other ideas. Anyway, avoidance, do watch out. Firstly, some advice might be to stop giving in to the belief that self-reliance is king, because it isn't. Secondly, investigate your deactivating strategies. Like, what way are you pushing your partners away, and can you identify those and stop them from happening? Thirdly, try to prioritize relationships with secure attachers, and don't mess with the lives of anxious attachers, because it just doesn't help you or them. Fourth, as an avoidant, stop daydreaming and fantasizing about a ghost partner of an ex or an imaginary future perfect partner, because again, it's never going to make you happy, it's just going to make you restless. As they say, desire is a contract with yourself to be unhappy until you get the thing, but you're never actually going to get the thing because it's a fantasy, so you need to stop fantasizing. Instead, you need to focus on being actually stoic and learning to practice gratitude. Try making a list of the great qualities of your partner and all of the things that they do instead, and then try to maintain ways to be grateful for that. And these are some really big steps that you can do to push yourself in the right direction. Now, I know that speaking this, that most avoidants who are listening will still be in the first section of just not thinking that it's a problem. So this is as much for anyone who's with an avoidant to understand, rather than the avoidant themselves. Anyway, this has been a really fascinating topic to dive into, and I wish I had a lot more time to go into it, because there's so much stuff to really cover. I feel attachment can really be an entire season in itself if you start looking at the deeper questions, like correctly diagnosing your style in your partners, how to make each different relationship dynamic work, how to navigate conflict, what happens if these styles become abusive, and when do you decide to end a relationship? And if you fake being a secure partner, can you fake it till you make it? And what about fostering the right attachment style in a child when they're growing up? Well, I don't quite have the time and experience to write a full book on this, but I will be getting Jessica Baum, who is a really good author on attachment, on the podcast in a few months' time. So you can look forward to that. And until then, we'll have the next week's episodes on boundaries and choosing the right partner for us that will certainly help us in the right direction. Thank you so much for listening, and if you enjoyed the episode or found anything useful, do please share it with someone you think would like it, and or give me a comment, because it's very much appreciated and helps other people find the show. Remember that life is very short and to be enjoyed, and there's no point putting off enjoyment until you've hit some arbitrary goals, because that's not how it works. So be kind to yourself, and whilst you're at it, be kind to someone else too.